Welcome to Swiss Adult. My name is Hans Fischer and my guest is Rebecca Solnit. Welcome, Rebecca.
Pleasure to be here.
In your book, Hope in the Dark, you talk about our times. Why in the dark? What is wrong with our times?
The sentence that gave me the title is a line by Virginia Woolf from her journal written during the First World War. In the journal, she says, "The future is dark, which is on the whole the best in the future can be, I think," which I think is a magnificent sentence. We often use the word darkness to suggest something that's gloomy, that's sad, that's scary, that's evil. But for Virginia Woolf in this sentence, it really seems to mean that the future is unknowable, that the future is mysterious. And dark in that sense, I think, is enormously rich and full of hope, because despair often comes from a sense that the future looks very much like the present, that we know what the future is going to be. Whereas hope, I think, is really rooted in uncertainty, in a sense that anything is possible, that we don't know what will happen, and so we shouldn't give up.
You mentioned two worldviews, the world of Yahweh and the world of Coyote. Could you tell us how you understand these two worlds?
Yeah. And without, animosity to Christianity and Judaism and that whole tradition, I was talking...
That would be the world of Yahweh.
Yeah. I used Yahweh to mean a world that's supposed to work according to a pretty simple moral arithmetic, where good people always do good things, bad people can only achieve bad things, and things are pretty predictable. The alternative I proposed comes from the coyote stories of Native Americans, which are wonderful, wonderful stories. In Native American mythology, not for every tribe, but for many tribes, Coyote creates the world. He's the creator. And instead of being all-powerful, all-wise, and extremely dignified, he's a joker, a clown, a trickster, a prankster, and he often gets himself into enormous trouble and then gets out again. And he's extremely funny. And so it's a much funnier worldview, in which the world is very improvisational and surprising and funny, and things go wrong, but you might survive. And it's a much more relaxed worldview.
You say that a crew which rests on a leader can only be as strong as he is, that the people are followers, and that we should actually cease to be that. Is it possible to have a world without leaders?
I think that you see a lot of movements now where there are people who are looked at as leaders, who are really spokespeople, coordinators, organizers, but not really leaders. And I see a lot of times people want a leader because they assume that's what works. And I look at the movement, and it's as though they think this person is leading them, but he's like the hood ornament on a car. They're moving him. They're the engine that's moving the car forward, and he just happens to be out in front.
Wow, that's a beautiful picture. In your book, you talk about safe danger. What is that?
I think that a lot of times we're so afraid, we don't even want to talk about what we're really afraid of, and so we blame it on something else instead. And so the safe dangers, for me, are the things we point to as what's really scary. Like that, you can look at the United States right now and see that the dangers we discovered with Hurricane Katrina were poverty, lack of investment in infrastructure, racism, lack of social services, lack of an organized, intelligent, and compassionate government. And none of these, and that the war on terror was not dealing with any of these things. The war on terror gave the Bush administration a safe danger and didn't look at, and allowed people to not look at all the other dangers that are being created. So that's one example. But I often see people switching. You saw that in the 1950s when everybody was afraid of communism. you know, in America where it wasn't a threat and not, you know, and often I think the things that pose real threats to us are we don't even name and we don't even want to look at.
You say that activism is an attempt to change something, to build something better. Yet, when it isn't reliable, you also say.
Yeah.
And it's changing. Can we live without certainty and security?
You know, we don't have any choice. You know, that I think that when you're in prison, you have a certain kind of certainty and reliability. You know what you'll have for breakfast the next day. And you might even know when your parole date is, if you'll get out of prison. But life, you know, life if you're free is pretty uncertain. And I think it can actually be quite wonderful that you don't know the outcome. And I think of the way a lot of people think about political change in history as though they've never gotten past addition and subtraction, the most basic formulas. And I think that we need a kind of algebra and calculus for how the world gets changed. Somebody said to me yesterday that the Zapatistas, the indigenous revolutionaries in Mexico, did not succeed 11 years after they began their revolution. But they're still there, which for me is a success. But what is the nature of their success? Would their success have been to realize every single one of their goals? If so, then they have not yet been a success. But what if it just takes another 40 or 50 or 100 years to realize them? Will they then be a success? What about the fact that the Zapatistas inspired indigenous peoples all over the Americas and activists all over the world to rethink what revolution could be, what social change could be, to transform the very language in which we think about politics and the very categories in which we think about liberation and community and justice? If we, and all those grounds, the Zapatistas are enormous success, but that's not a 1 plus 1 equals 2. That's a X plus Y equals divided by Q equals question mark.
Can you explain that?
Oh,
what you mean?
Yeah, I'm just trying to, you know, it's been a long time since I've had algebra. I'm just trying to suggest a much more complex formula. And, you know, and so I think often that that the uncertainty means that you don't count on success because you may not achieve it in your lifetime. It often takes 50 years or more to make a major change, to get women the vote, to ban slavery, to change the consciousness of a culture, to achieve equal rights for homosexuals. And a lot of people think that if you don't get it in a year or 5 years, it's failure. So there's that kind of uncertainty where I want people to not worry about what they don't get, but I also want them to see what they do get often. You can say that the American Civil Rights Movement was not entirely a success because the laws were changed, but there's still racism and discrimination and still terrible poverty among African Americans. But you can look at how the American Civil Rights Movement inspired people in Eastern Europe and South Africa and all over the world to use these techniques in the 80s and the 90s and the present to achieve justice and equality and make the world better, and see that in some ways Martin Luther King Jr. is not dead yet, and that these things are not, they're not over yet, and therefore there's a wonderful uncertainty of we never really finish with the project, so we may never win, but we might still be winning.
So can we say success is not, as we think, having reached a goal, rather a way?
Yeah, because I think we all, you know, there's a real desire on the part of activists to arrive in paradise. And I think paradise might be very boring. Paradise makes no demands on us. Everything is good. Everything is safe. There are no questions to be asked, no work to be done. We don't have to grow as individuals, we don't have to test our own morality and our own belief systems, we don't have to argue, and that just sounds really boring to me. And so I think that we can move towards a better world, and a world, and the world we live in now in many ways is a better world than it was 50 years ago. Many people who had few rights then, including women, homosexuals, people of color, colonized people have a great deal more now. And this doesn't mean that we now live in a world without racism and sexism and other troubles. But we live in a world in which enormous transformation has been wrought and will continue to be worked on, and that's the kind of change that I see where, and of course once slavery was eliminated from the United States, you could see the next problem. And people often also think that you'll focus on this problem, you'll fix it, and then you'll be done, rather than that you'll defeat this particular form of oppression and then you can move on to the next task.
Rebecca, thank you very much.
Thank you.